Hello and welcome to the Harlefo Show, a place where like-minded individuals gather to discuss the good, the bad, and the weirder side of Malifaux. Please bear in mind that we're all grown-ups here, so there may be some language not suitable for the more delicate of listeners, and all opinions expressed are those of the individuals involved. Now grab yourself a lovely tipple and a light snack, sit back, relax, and let the Harlefo Show commence.
Hi guys, and welcome back to the Harlefo podcast. My name is Tom, and I'm joined, as always, by the lovely Courtney.
Hello.
And Chris.
Hello.
And we are back to talk about the lighter side of Malifaux, where we pick a keyword, one of us pitches exactly why we should all be playing it, and the other two sit and give the opponent's perspective. Now, after last week, with my wonderful, uplifting Pandora crew, we're going to change presenting style, and Chris is going to take the turn this week, and he's going to move us away from the Neverborn over to the Bayou, and we're going to be looking at a certain gentleman and the tale of his big hat. So, Chris, who are you presenting, and what is your elevator pitch for him?
Yes, today we're going to talk about Summer Teeth Jones, the Bayou boss. He was probably the second master I picked up for Malifaux. Instantly attracted to him because I was a major greenskins player for Warhammer Fantasy, and I just love the idea of tons of little green things hurting each other, hurting you, and just causing all-round chaos. He's the boss of the Bayou, and his main stick is basically he summons in whatever he needs for the job, so there's tons of different options with him. He's a very, very versatile master. And like I said, it is a lot of chaos, a lot of random things happening, damaging yourself quite often, hopefully damaging the energy more than that, really.
So our sales pitch is the chaotic summoner, essentially, there. So who are we getting in our core set then, Chris?
So in the core set, really, you get Summer Teeth Jones, the boss man himself. He also comes with two skeeters, or mosquitoes, if you're posh. They're his totems. You get Lenny Jones, his son, who's technically the Bayou boss because of some random bout of voting, but we all know some is the real boss. He's a henchman. And you get three good old boys, some quite tanky little minions. One of them's a girl, but she's still a good old boy in the eyes of the Bayou. And that rounds the box off to around 30 soul stones, really. But to be honest, if you're just buying the core box, you're not getting any use out of Summer.
Now, as with any summoner, I think you're going to be investing a little bit outside of that box. And knowing Chris's Bayou collection, there's a fair few things that Summer can bring in, which is really, really fun for him, but also takes a little bit of investment, shall we say.
Investment is is an understatement, to be honest with you. There's a lot to buy to make it a playable list, really. But we'll get to that shortly. So the main stick of the Big Hat crew is the Bayou Bash. So whenever a model activates, it receives +1 to opposed duels for any other friendly Big Hat model within 3 inches, up to a maximum of +2. So you want them operating in small groups of three, really, so that every time something activates and tries to do something, it's getting +2 to every duel it does. Hence why you need a lot of money to get a lot of models to have lots of little groups all over the place. Courtney, what's the first thing you noticed about the Big Hat crew?
So I have quite a bit of experience playing against this because I think I've played you about 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
And I would say actually the one I think that affects your opponent the most is the rule bigger hat than you.
Yeah.
Which basically means that at the end phase, your opponent has to make a choice. Does he want to discard all his past tokens or does he want to discard his hand? The reason why I really like this ability is because Soma can summon a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Giving your opponent a lot of pass tokens. But this rule stops Soma from getting punished by that.
Yeah.
So it's definitely something that your opponent has to keep in mind because you don't want to lose either. Do you lose your hands? But you keep your advantage for next turn because you have a lot of pass tokens, or do you keep your pass tokens and lose your? The other way, you dump all your pass tokens and keep your hand.
Yeah.
So it's definitely something that your opponent has to keep in mind.
Yeah, you expect against a summoner that you're going to get some level of like flexibility where you're going to be able to get an advantage, because if they summon in five things, at least you're going to have to get five pass tokens to get that last activation. But summer really is just making you burn through your resources, and like there's no point keeping that super hot hand turn one if he doesn't summon much and you end up binning it anyway.
Yeah, he puts a lot of pressure on you constantly, Summer, and it's one of the things I really like about him. You're forcing your opponent to think just by bringing in useless little minions, basically. Disposable models that you're bringing in just for the sake of getting cards is actually putting more pressure on your opponent than you realise. What about you, Tom? What do you find facing Summer?
Well, we played a game yesterday and my immediate reaction was let's talk through his summon mechanic, I think, because there were times where you managed to pull out like five minions against me, which just made like a war.
I lived the dream on the second to last turn, I think it was, and I cheated in a red joker for a summon. So basically his summon ability is extended family. So once a turn, he can name any number of big hat minions. Now the target number of the action is 10 of masks plus the total cost of the name models. And then he can summon them anywhere within 6 inches. Now, when he summons a model, he has to stick a family gathering upgrade onto the summon model. The family gathering upgrade gives them slow, but it also gives them a healing ability on a bonus action. They can heal 1, 2, 3 and gain poison 1 with a target number of 10 on a stat 5. Pretty easy to get off. But the main thing with that is it is plentiful 5. So it means you can only ever summon 5 things in maximum or have 5 things on the table at once. Now, in terms of getting around that, you can get a crow trigger. Wait, you ain't my kid. And one of those models you've summoned in, you can discard the upgrade off it, which means you've got more space for summoning in the future. Now, in terms of what he can actually summon, there are a lot of big hat minions. I mean, we'll go into more detail of what exactly they do once we get around to rounding off the box. But you have got Banjanistas, Bayou Gremlins. He can bring Skeeters back. He can get Criers, Good Old Boys, Spit Hogs. Yeah, there's quite a lot of options. And for example, for a 6 of masks, you'd get a Bayou Gremlin. 7 of masks will get you a Skeeter. 8 of masks, 2 Bayou Gremlins. And it goes all the way up to the Red Joker, which could get you 5 Bayou Gremlins. It could get you a Crier and 2 Bayou Gremlins, 2 Gremlins and 2 Skeeters, a Spit Hog and 2 Bayou Gremlins. There's so much flexibility and versatility in what you can actually summon with him.
I think the thing that strikes me being on the opposing side of it as well is the 6-inch bubble. The fact that he summons within 6 inches means that if he's pulling out quite a few things, he can immediately affect the battlefield, so he can tie things down in combat. He can contest an objective. He can block. Well, one thing you did really well yesterday, he can block avenues on the board by just summoning into a certain corridor passage between terrain.
Yeah,
so it's that 6-inch summoning range that actually is really strong.
Yeah, I did it yesterday with you, didn't I? I shot twice against you with Summer, and then to stop retaliation, just cheated in the Red Joker and put 5 Bio Gremlins right in front of you, so you had to chew through them to get to him. I mean, it didn't take much effort.
Rusty Alice did not appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. I think she already had Bio Gremlins nearby anyway, because it was just a wall of them. Luckily, the Minion 8, you can have up to 8 on the board at once, but I think 5 or 6, maybe I got up to at one point yesterday. It was a fair few anyway.
There was definitely a Bayou Gremlin graveyard by the end of the
Because the center.
I'm glad we did that on Vassal, because there'd be no room on the actual board.
No.
The thing with Bayou Gremlins is Chris doesn't even care if you kill him, because he's drawing cards off it.
Yeah, exactly that.
Exactly, and there's a lot of abilities that Soma's got to actually benefit from things dying around him, aren't there, Chris?
Yeah. So obviously, Bayou Gremlins, when they die, you can draw a card. But also, if a friendly model within 6 inches are killed, within 6 inches is killed, which they're going to be because I've just summoned them in within 6 inches, I can discard a card to get another friendly big hat model to actually take a gun action targeting whatever killed it. That's a pig-eating grin. It's on the front of Soma's card. So you kill my 2-point Bayou Gremlin, I get Georgie and Olaf, for example, to take a shot at you, or a Good Old Boy, or I don't know, whatever's nearby with a gun, basically, will just shoot back at whatever just killed that 2-point minion, and I'm getting a free card draw off it as well.
Well, Soma can do it himself, can't he? He's got a pretty nifty gun.
It's another friendly big hat model, unfortunately, so he can't discard a card and pop a shot himself. That would be far too good.
Can we talk? Well, my segue was his gun is pretty awesome anyway.
His gun is really awesome. So it's a 12 inch range on it, which, you know, on its own, 12 inch on a gun's fantastic. He's stat 5, but most of the time you're going to have two models within 3 inches of him. So that gets him up to stat 7 on the gun. It's against your defense, and the damage track is 2, 3 with a blast, or 4 with a double blast on a severe. Now, you can get a ram on that for puncher, which quite often you might want a stone just to get it in there. So when you damage, you get a plus flip for every ram in the final dual total up to a maximum of double plus. So if you've got a decent ram in hand and you stone as well, you can add double plus onto whatever you flip. So if you focused as well, you can get around a lot of things, hard to wound, for example. Even if they cheat in a good card, you know, you're still going to get that decent damage flip so that you can maybe get the double blast off and
you get a fair bit of focus out of that crew as well.
Yeah, you are anyway, yeah. Which we'll go into with Georgie and Olaf when we get to him, really. And the old cranky buffs it. There's so many little bubbles affecting things all over the place. But his other trigger on that gun's daze on a crow, where he can actually stun you and push you up to 3 inches in any direction. So that's great just for a bit of board control on the back of the gun there.
Something I was going to say is, so because of like all these bubbles,
yeah,
is his crew something you want to sort of keep together?
You do and you don't. So you do want bubbles, but like I say, you want small groups of 3 or 4 operating all over the place in key positions. You do want things within 8 inches of Lenny. We'll get into that when we get onto Lenny a bit more. You want stuff within 6 inches of Summer because of his aura. You want stuff within 4 inches of Banjanistas for when they activate. You want stuff within, I think it's 6 inches of Old Cranky for his special ability. You want stuff within, everything has its own bubble and everything has its own little aura that affects all the models. And it all depends what you want in that particular area of the board. There's a lot more to it than it first seems. He's a very finesse summoner, I'll probably say. He does have a little melee.
It's worth saying as well that he has got a defensive trigger, which is pretty solid as well.
Yeah, yeah.
That if you do manage to pin him down, he just runs away.
It does, yeah. It's built in. The mask's built in. So, yeah, you hit him on his defense, he'll just push 3 inches away at the end of the day. And if he's near Lenny as well, he's getting cover from Lenny just being nearby, Lenny's little aura. So he's pretty hardy, to be fair, Summer. And there's plenty of ways to heal him in a big hat crew anyway. And he's got his other thing as well, Make Me Proud Boys. So he summons in these Bayou Gremlins and then he turns them into bombs. So it's a stat 6 target number 10. He only needs a 4. He can pick any friendly minion. It ignores range and then it just explodes and models within 2 inches of it suffer 2 damage.
Wow.
That's pretty tasty when you've got some little ones that are expendable right next to something quite pricey.
Exactly that.
And exactly, yeah.
You do it on a Bayou Gremlin, you're getting a card back anyway. So it costs you a 4 to blow up a Gremlin, cause 2 damage to everything around it, and then you're getting a card back.
What about his bonus action, Chris? Like, what are you getting out of that as well? Because that helps you with the non-throwaways, I suppose, as well.
It does, it does. Now, I don't tend to use it that much, to be honest with you, because other models in the crew give you different options with bonus actions. So it's called Smarter Than a Look. So he puts up a 6-inch aura. You need a 7 for this to go off. It's that 6 against target number 13. And until the end phase, after a friendly, non-insignificant model within range is killed, he can draw a card. Now, it can get you like double card draw in a way, because a good old boy has a demise ability where you draw a card when it's killed. If someone's got his aura up, he'll get another card off the back of that. But it doesn't really help with Bayou Gremlins and things. If they die, you're still just getting the one card. But like I say, there's plenty of options, yep, with other bonus actions to do because of other models that are sitting around, really. So I don't tend to actually use it that often.
Okay, so that's Soma. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the totems?
So he has 2 skeeters, 2 giant mosquitoes that are basically annoying knobheads. They're insignificant, so they can't interact. They're ignored for strategy and schemes, but they can fly. They also have hunting partner on the card. So if they engage a model, you can ignore them for friendly fire purposes when you shoot in. And also, if anything wants to try and disengage from them, they have to discard a card first. They're expendable, like most of the big hat stuff, so you draw a card when it's killed. And again, they've got the Bayou Bash, so they get +1 to every opposed duel when they activate for a big hat model within 3 inches.
And the bloody Defense 6. They're Defense 6
defense
as well.
Defense 6, yeah, which is ridiculous, which, you know, if Lenny's nearby, it's better than 6. But like I say, we'll get into that when we get into the boss's son himself. Now, the main thing I use the Mosquitoes for is to be annoying. So that's a tactical action on their card. So until the end phase, if an enemy model declares a tactical action other than walk or charge, it gains Distracted 1. Now, I did play this wrong for a little while. I've probably played it wrong against you, Courtney, because I was doing it on attack actions. But it's any tactical action other than walk or charge. So,
well, you've heard it here first, folks.
Yeah, Chris, I cheated. I'm a disgrace. I'm going to openly admit it in front of our hundreds and thousands of listeners. I made a mistake. I'm human. I err, therefore I am.
Never do that on YouTube.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Luckily, you can't comment on this. Ha. But there's plenty of tactical actions you can shut down with that. Plenty of models that do rely on tactical actions.
Corny, do these little buggers annoy you just as much as they annoy me? Because they're a real pain in my neck. Like, when I'm trying to get ready to, like, blast something off the face of the earth, I have one of these sodding things come and fly over and tie me up.
Yeah, they are particularly annoying.
And then Defense 6, and they're like, screw you, I'm just going to sit here and be a pain. It's like, oh, I've got to waste AP.
Yeah, exactly. And it goes into, again, if you kill them, they're expendable, so Chris gets to draw a card. And, you know, he can just summon them back. And in conjunction with another unit, which we'll get onto, the Criers, they can be just absolutely so annoying to deal with.
It's the fact that they're move 6 as well, so they're bolting ahead 12 inches in the first turn, and then they're on you turn 2. And it's just a nice, easy throwaway activation for Chris and Soma that they can just go, oh, well, I'm just going to hold back my big stuff. My first activation or second activation of the second turn is just going to be a Skeeter. They're going to go and tie up Rusty Alice. And it's like, oh, come on. You got to wait a whole turn to try and clear it off. And with Defense 6, you're then getting cleared off easily.
Yeah, and but there's other things like Hunting Partner as well, because it not only do you not take friendly fire if you shoot into combat with them, but they're forcing you to discard a card if you want to disengage, which can be really good in some schemes.
They're really good throwaway tarpit. I think you pick the 10-stone model on the opposing side and you just go, I'm just going to chuck it in front of that, because if it dies, I don't care, but they're going to have to waste AP to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
There was a really nice little play I did against Courtney a couple of weeks back. We played Corrupted Idols, I think it was. Is it Corrupted Idols, the new one? It is Corrupted Idols. It involved Lenny yeeting a Skeeter and then a Crier coming in and obeying the Skeeter as well, and effectively meant the Skeeter was 22 inches up the board obeying, interacting on turn 1, which I think caught you out a little bit.
Caught you just like,
Really fun.
It was,
I mean, Courtney, you can't talk. You've got the bloody Akirio thing now that turns up in your deployment zone third activation turn 1, so you could shut the hell up.
The Kirio is fair and balanced. I won't listen to this slander.
I'll come on to
Kirai. It'll just be me and Courtney just slinging poo at each other.
I'll move on to Lenny now and tell you what he does, really, because
can I start with this? Because I freaking hate this guy.
Go on then, go on. You tell us about Lenny.
He sucks. Lenny, like, he's a henchman to start with, and there's all that. I just want to pull one thing from his abilities. So you've got the Bayou Bash thing, which means that on your activations, you're getting probably +2 to every stat. So some of the things are hitting with 7s. Bloody Lenny, though, gives +1 to people outside of their activations. So he's got Gremlin General, and it says friendly big hat models within 8 inches of him, which, let's be honest, is going to be most of the crew because they're bubbling together, receive +1 to duels performed outside of their activation. It's just horrendous because they're really powered up, and unless you've got a way to push him away, and we can talk about this for the weaknesses later, unless you can push him away from the rest of the crew, which you're probably not doing, he's giving them +1. So all these little annoying gremlins have actually got probably better stats than you when you're trying to hit them.
Well, it puts the Skeeters up to defense 7 as well if they're near Lenny.
Yeah, just, it's infuriatingly good.
Yeah, yeah. It's not just that. Lenny has bodyguards, so anyone within 2 inches of him gets cover as well. He wants to be in the thick of it, in the thick of the crew, really. Not too far forward unless you want to try and make him go in and take something out with his whacking stick. He's hard to wound, so he's a little bit tanky there. What, 10 wounds on a 9-cost model? That's not too bad.
Ruthless as well, which is good.
Ruthless and grit frantic too, so once he gets below half wounds, he gets a plus on his attack and damage flips. So that's when he really...
Courtney, how do you deal with this guy?
With Lenny?
Half attack is willpower. That's the only thing I can think to do. Like, with Levy, I had to try and shoot him off the board. But if you haven't got easy access... I mean, he's willpower 4, so... It's not amazing, but to be fair, he's probably then getting positives because he's got people near him.
The thing to remember about him is that he's friendly to himself and he is within 8 inches of his own aura. So his willpower does go up to 5 because he's of the Gremlin General.
Yeah, exactly.
And he has cover because, again, he's friendly to himself. Oh, no, it's other friendly models.
He doesn't give cover to himself, luckily.
Yeah. Well, thank God for that. I don't think I actually managed to kill Lenny in any of our games. I think it was just a case of there was so much other stuff to deal with, and then Lenny was just making it much harder to kill anything that I don't think I ever finished him off, but a lot of it was also his bonus action. Which just helped a lot.
So you're talking through this, Chris, is random bouts of brilliance.
Yeah, to be fair, I've never used the bonus action against you, Tom, because I've had such a bad experience with it against Courtney. Yeah. It's exactly what I said.
I'm thankful for Courtney ruining it for you.
It's exactly what I love about Gremlins. It's one of those completely random things. It is random bout of brilliance, it's called. Basically, you flip the top card of your fate deck and you resolve whatever happens based on the suit of what you flip. So on a tome, you get to draw whatever card you flipped. On a ram, you heal 1, 2, 3. On a mask, he gets pushed 1, 2, 3 inches in a direction chosen by the opposing player. And on a crow, it was a sneeze, and all models within 2 inches suffer 0, 1, 2 damage. Now, I would say 50% of the time I'm flipping a mask on that, so Courtney gets to push him wherever he wants. Another 30% of the time I'm probably flipping a crow and he's damaging all models within 2 inches. It was only
killing all the biogram,
killing everything nearby that he's trying to give cover to.
Mate, what, at one time I had assassination and someone was just above half and he did the bonus action with and he got damaged him over, got the point. It was so
it wasn't just that, yeah.
Awesome. I love the idea of just like, oh, he's him down to half wounds.
It wasn't just that, it was the severe that I flipped. So it was 2 damage off Summer from a sneeze from Lenny. And it was like, oh, thanks.
That's a powerful sneeze.
That's it. That is a powerful sneeze. So
he's a big boy.
So yeah.
Speaking of power, can we just also draw attention to the fact that he's move 5, he's got a 2-inch melee attack, which is gold in Malifaux, and it's min 3 with amazing triggers.
Yeah.
Like, he's probably going to be a stat 7 when he's swinging it at you. Ideally, but even if it's stat 5 or 6, 3, 4, 5 damage track, and then he's got the ability to destroy scheme markers, give blast damage, or push them 4 inches away.
Yeah.
It's a ridiculously good combat attack.
And if he's below half strength, he's getting pluses to those hits and damage as well. So, yeah, he is
so good.
He is quite a tanky boy once he does get into the thick of it. Now, I do tend to charge him in late game, keep him back early game, protecting everything around him, really. But then once you need it to ramp up, he can just charge in and do some damage. But he does have his gun action as well, Whacked Piglet. I did prefer this in second edition. I don't know if you guys ever saw it, but basically in second edition, if you did minimum damage with his gun and got the trigger, you actually summoned a piglet in base contact with the target, which I thought was really fun, really thematic. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen anymore, but still, it's stat 5, 8-inch range. Obviously, stat 5 can go up to stat 7 because you'll have his friends nearby. 2, 2, 3 with a blast damage, and on a mask, you can shove aside once per activation. So push the target 4 inches away from him, then Lenny can push 4 inches and declare a melee attack targeting a different model.
Do you get much use out of his toss? Because I've seen you use it a couple of times for like tactical position. I mean, one of the main things we'll say about Summer is he's very flexible.
Yeah.
And that toss is a really useful tool. Oh, isn't it? Toss.
As Courtney will attest to, I'm a big fan of tossing my own models.
You announce it before you do it every time in a weird voice.
I come up with a small story about how someone's looking quite lonely and sad. And Lenny's
taking them out to dinner, candles, yeah. No music.
And then afterwards, treat him to a good old-fashioned toss.
He literally watches you, looks you in the eyes as he's doing it.
Gently rut there, anyway.
Yeah, exactly that. So toss, it's stat 4 against size. You know, it's going to go off no matter what you flip because you're going to relent with your own model. Even if you flip the Black Joker, you're still on a 4. Whatever you're going against is going to be size 3 or less, really. So there's no way of this ever failing, really. And you can push any model up to 10 inches in any direction. If you're interrupted, if you hit another model or you hit a brick wall or anything in the way, then it's a target number 14 defense duel or you suffer 2 damage. Same for anything you crash into. So I have used it just to throw a Bayou Gremlin at another model and cause them both to take a bit of damage. You know, the Bayou Gremlin might die, but I'll get a card off it. But it forces you to make a, you know, a target number 14 is a decent defense duel. But mainly I use it for positioning. So Lenny tends to sit back in the middle, like I say, buffing out his aura, helping everyone out, but also getting other models into key positions across the center line or wherever they need to be.
I would say from an opposing point of view, Lenny is 100% my priority against Sober. I think his benefit that he gives other people is so good that you need to move him out of position or you need to take him off the board. Now, there aren't many who's going to take him off the board quickly.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you can get hit that 8 inches into an awkward position, either the random act of brilliance pushes him and you push him a bit further. Yeah. But I think if you're the opposing player, you're looking at him and you are keeping a very close eye on where that 8-inch bubble is and trying to move it in an annoying waste of AP kind of way.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly that. And it's one of the hardest things to manage with a big hat crew is the sheer amount of auras that you need to kind of overlap, and you want such and such within 3 inches of such and such and such and such. And it's kind of, to be honest, Vassal has helped a lot with managing all that because you can overlay the auras. And obviously we're all locked in the houses at the minute because the whole world's on lockdown. But on Vassal, you can see the auras in the way that certain players we know can in real life. It's just like eyeball. Oh, that's exactly 4 inches. But I think Vassal...
Yeah, it's good practice, and you've got a good formation in place with that as well.
Yeah, it's translated well onto the tabletop, I think. I practiced Summer a fair bit in Vassal first before I took him onto the table to try and get those auras down. But still, it is something you're going to struggle with for a while.
It might be something we can chuck up on the Twitter, actually, if we take like a screenshot next time we do a Vassal game and you're using it just as a what this can all look like together.
Yeah. I could go into how I like to deploy, but obviously... Everyone plays different, but if I just take an example, I'll put all the models up and I'll put their auras and how they overlap, and you can just see what an absolute mess it is to look at. Once it's all overlaid, it is ridiculous.
So who have we got left in the core set then, Chris? Who's the remainders? Is it the...
It's the good old boys or good old girl as well. We can't leave her out too. So Courtney, go on, tell me your experiences against good old boys.
The good old boys... I found them to be quite the sort of damage of the crew. I don't know if that's right, Chris. They seem to have a lot of things going for them, like swagger, which basically gives them +1 focus when they're walking, which, you know, is great.
Yeah,
you're essentially getting to concentrate for free. I mean, you could walk and then concentrate and get 2 focus. I'm assuming that's right.
So
they seem to be quite they seem to be the minions that you want to have to do some proper good damage.
Yeah, how about you, Tom? What did you find with them?
I think they're 7 soul stones, so they're not cheap, but the fact that you've got a 7 HP minion that's got, you know, a -2 attack, which also has bonuses to it, a pretty good gun with a blast on it, and can heal itself is pretty tasty. Never mind the fact they're hard to wound. So I think they're exactly worth their points, and you don't throw them away frivolously, but they can take a wing each perhaps and they can reliably hold down that wing unless they're going up against something absolutely terrifying, you know. And usually they've got a skeeter to help them up when it's Chris playing to kind of hunt together with them. So they, the skeeter holds up the big thing, the good old boy shoots it in the face because they can with their gun.
Yeah.
The only thing that amuses me greatly, and this is in quite a few of your abilities, but the ricochet off the shotgun when you inadvertently shoot your own things.
Yeah, yeah. But there is a nice trick with that for stuff that's bunched up as well, because the shotgun, 8-inch range, stat 5, obviously. Bayou Bash is going to make that slightly better. But as with most Bayou stuff, you have to declare the triggers. So it's 2, 3, 3 damage with blasts on moderate and severe. On a ram, wild shot, so the target suffers +1 damage. Then I choose a friendly model within range and line of sight, and that suffers 1 damage. Ricochet, you choose another model within 3 inches of the target, and that model suffers 1, 2, 4 damage, which can't be cheated. Now, an interesting point with this, which came up on the Bayou chat, if I focus to shoot at you, the focus also applies to the ricochet damage as well. So you could end up actually doing damage on the normal hit of 2 and severe damage on the ricochet of 4. So it's a good way of tug. And you don't need line of sight for that. So I could shoot at a model, hit it for 2, and hit a model that's hidden around the corner out of view of the good old boy and do 4 damage on that.
That sounds like someone's pored over a rule book and managed to find the exact point to rinse a focus.
But it's something I'd never spot in a million years, really. It's one of those crazy things.
But good, though.
Yeah. I mean, you can put Distracted out on a crow as well. Distracted's always good. Or the Tone Figure, the one that if I get, I'll often cheat to try and avoid. And immediately this action fails and models within 1 inch of the good old boy suffer 1 damage. I have had that go off a few times, and it's always when the good old boy's got a load of models within 1 inches of him. So you don't really want that to happen. But the main thing...
I think the good old boy quite likes going after a weak target as well, doesn't he? Because if you can get in close combat, he's on positive flips and you've got onslaught trigger, you could potentially do quite a bit of pain to something if it's already been weakened.
He can, yeah. And especially if he's below full health, he gets pluses to his attack actions. That's built into his broken bottle attack. So yeah, if his health's below his maximum, he gets a plus to hit. You can get the ram trigger on that drunken strength as well. So when resolving, the target suffers an additional amount of damage equal to the value of the poison condition on the good old boy. Now his bonus action, Trusty Flask, heals him up 1, 2, 3 and gives him poison 1. So what you'll quite often want to do is do that turn 1 when he's already on full wounds anyway, just to give him a poison. The poison will tick off at the end of turn 1 to take him below his maximum health, so that when you're hitting things turn 2, he's getting a plus to hit, along with whatever focus he's already got on him and whatever focus other people have given to him. But another thing that people often forget with the good old boys is they're really, really tanky. Now, if you look at the front of the card, they've got Bring It, which means they get a plus flip to the defense jewel for every enemy model within 1 inch. So if you run a good old boy into a group of 3 or 4 models and they're all within 1 inch, you're getting +3 or +4 flips to your defense jewel and you're hard to wound.
I mean, yeah, that's horrible.
Yeah.
Absolutely horrible.
I think I had it against you, Courtney, where I think I did have him engaging 3 things at once and you went to hit him back. And I was flipping 4 cards, picking the highest and getting +1 defense because Lenny was nearby as well. So yeah. It was defense 6, flipping 4 cards.
Yeah, I mean, the crew can be quite tanky when it wants to be, especially when we've got the friends near them.
Yeah.
And the good old boy definitely is a great example of that.
It's just a great all-round model, really. It hits hard, it shoots well, it's tanky. It is a great 7-point model. And quite often, you probably will be taking at least 2 in your starting crew and bringing more in as needed, because Summer just calls out his kids whenever he needs them.
So I think that rounds off our core set, doesn't it, Chris?
If we head
to a message from our channel sponsors, and we'll come back and Chris can tell us how exactly he rounds that out to 50 soulstones. We'll be back in a second.
Available now on Holofo Records is the newest album from the Gremlins with Attitude, the GWA, straight out of the Bayou. featuring their greatest hits such as Banjanista, Banjanista, The Boss's Discretion is Advised, Go Dress Yourself, If It Ain't Oinkin', and also the number one hit single, Fuck the Guild.
Fuck the Guild, we're coming straight out the bayou. From a gang named Grimms with Attitude. I'll get my bro, yo, we'll make a show, yo. And then you'll know, yo, the Guild have gotta go, ho.
Straight out of the bayou. Available now in all good, bad, and weird record stores. Get it while stocks last.
And that was a wonderful message from our co-hosts and channel sponsors. So we're back to today's content, which is Soma's Crew. And we're looking at rounding out up to 50 Soul Stones, Chris. So there's a lot of boxes available for Soma. So where are we going to start to get our crew numbers up?
So you pretty much need to buy everything, Big Hat. So there's three distinct boxes. The first one is the Deliverance box. This one comes with the Spit Hog and the Bayou Gremlin. So go on, Courtney, tell us a bit about the Spit Hog.
So it is a gremlin on a giant pig. I think, I don't know what the other version is because that's the only version I've ever seen.
It's two gremlins carrying a pig.
Ah, well, God, there's a pig involved anyway.
Yeah, there's always
basically
pigs.
There's essentially, the Spit Hog is this, a big source of healing for them.
Yeah.
They can, I believe she can melee stuff that's near her.
Yeah.
And if they're friendly, they get heals. I think she's got a lore as well. Yeah, lore as well. And Biobash and Foods Up, which lets them heal, lets other models, basically gives them a bonus action so that they can heal. Just doing one damage to the Spit Hog. So, like, essentially, yeah, the Spit Hog is a big source of healing for the crew.
It's
fair to say this is one of the first things that tends to get summoned in by Chris. This is one of the early turn summons.
It's a massive 50 mil base. It's a good roadblock as well because it's disguised. So you can just summon it in front of all your stuff. It's disguised, so if anything charges in, it can't hit it. But all of your models can move through it. It's got hoist the hog, basically. So when your models move, the hog gets hoisted out the way. Your models just ignore it when they're charging, when they're walking, whatever it is. But it blocks enemies coming in. Also, it has draw their attention. So if it resolves an attack against an enemy model, any friendly model within line of sight can discard a card to interact. So it's a good way of getting shenanigans done. There's so many shenanigans. But yeah, like Courtney said, that foods up. Any friendly models within 2 inches of it can take a bonus action to heal 2, 3, 4 damage, but it actually damages the Spit Hog, that it causes 1 damage to it, which is why I tend to summon it in. A good friend of ours at the club, David, he gave me this hint, because I used to start with the Spit Hog on the field, but if you summon it in, then it gets the upgrade attached to it, the Drunken Stupid, which gives the Spit Hog a bonus action where it can heal 1, 2, 3 and gain poison. So it heals itself that way.
Yeah. It's a big source of healing for the crew.
Yeah, it's also got a lot of movement shenanigans, like you said. The lore, it can pull models out of position. Its normal bonus action, creep along, it can push itself towards a friendly model in line of sight. And food for everyone. I've not used this that often yet because I'm wary of losing the Spit Hog, but I need to be a bit more brave with it. But it puts out a 6-inch pulse, basically, on a 5. And every enemy model within range has to pass a target number 13 willpower jewel or place into base contact with the Spit Hog. So it's a great way of moving entire chunks of models out of position.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So the other model in the box, the Bayou Gremlin. Tom, what do you think of these boys?
They're fodder, aren't they? I think is the most polite way of putting it. You know, 2 HP cost 2 nothings. But they are a little bit of an annoyance. I think if you get that red joker that Chris said earlier and you chuck out 5 of the buggers, they are definitely blocking people in the way.
Yeah.
But you can put them on a hill with their guns and they're giving bonuses to each other because of Bayou Bash, and they can put out little bits of damage. You know, if they go up to stat 5, because they start with 3.
Yeah.
So if they go up to, say, stat 5 and they pepper you, they could pepper little bits of damage away. And it's a way of getting that activation advantage as well. You can chuck them out to stodge people and waste other people's AP, and then that means you can waste their actual activations as well if they're not using their pass tokens effectively,
yeah,
to get your big guys to have a free shot at the end of the turn, which is really valuable.
Yeah, exactly that, exactly. The disposable minions, the card draw for you, like say, if you're going to chuck in an 11 to summon a particular model, you may as well spend another two and get a Bio Gremlin off the back of it as well, because when the Bio Gremlin dies, you're getting a card back. So for me, there's not much difference between chucking an 11 and a 13 when it comes to summoning.
No, it's definitely a low-risk thing to get quite a lot of versatility on the battlefield. I mean, they are insignificant. They're not scheming for you, but you do have abilities with some of your other models to get them to scheme for you. So you can essentially, in some very clutch situations, chuck one 6 inches ahead where it needs to be for a scheme, and then use something else to kind of help with that.
Yeah, we'll go on to that now. So the second box you want to get is the Listen Up box. This comes with Cranky, old Cranky, who's a nice little enforcer, and 3 Gremlin Criers. So, Cranky, Tom, what do you think of Cranky?
Cranky's really interesting because you look at him on his card and you don't think much of him. You know, 4 wounds, stat 5, he's got an obey, but, you know, is he just going to be an obey bot? But actually, his abilities start to really add up when you think about what else is happening in the crew. So the main area I notice as an opposing player is not only the fact that he gives you a plus flip to your initiative, but it's also the fact that he's got shouting orders. So friendly big hat models within a 6-inch aura may discard a card to treat the concentrate action as a bonus action.
Yeah.
And that suddenly makes a lot of people very, very efficient.
Yeah, so that's what I said about not really using Summer's bonus action and not really using Lenny's, because instead I'm just ditching a card and concentrating for a bonus action.
Yeah, and they're relatively meager stats. Obviously, he's not jumping too far into the fray, so he's benefiting from Soma, he's benefiting from other people around, he's benefiting from Lenny.
Yeah.
So actually, he's not as bad as he looks on paper.
Yeah. That's exactly it. That's the thing to remember with all the big hat models, really. When you look at any of their stats, think about out of activation, they're getting plus one to these stats from Lenny. Drawing activation on most of their tactical actions and attack actions, they're going to be getting plus one or two from models nearby. So the stats at first glance look poor, but really, they can really ramp up.
Yeah, definitely. Is there any other things that you think Cranky's particularly good at, Chris, or is he there just to give you passive bonuses?
He's there for the passive bonuses, and also, like, your stuff's dying left, right, and center. So it's his bonus action, Frantic Search. He can remove a corpse marker within 2 inches. You discard the top card of your fate deck. If it's a ram or a tome, you get a soulstone back. So it's costing you a corpse marker. It's a 50% chance, really, that you're going to get a soulstone out of it. It's a really decent little bonus action. Other than that, yeah, he tends to stick around the back. If I do have the high mask for an obey, because it's quite often a 9 of masks you'll need to obey a model, unless he's got a couple of friends nearby, and then it'll go down to a 7, because obviously plus 2 because of Bayou Bash. But it's kind of a clutch obey with him, really. I use the other models in the box for obeys, and that's the Criers. I'll let Courtney tell you all about the Criers. So go on, Courtney.
Fuck these guys. yeah, the Criers. This is definitely a big sausage shenanigans in this group.
Yeah.
I think the big thing is that they have obey. Nice thing is if they're obeying something that's a lower cost to them, they get the inbuilt. They can put any mask or any... God, I got this off my head.
It's the ability, isn't it?
Any suits, there we go. Yeah. You can put any suit onto it, so you can just put the mask in, so it will go off.
Yeah.
But the massive thing is the threatening beatings trigger, which basically turns off insignificant. So, and they can just do what they want. So you could have your insignificant skeeter that's in a great position, just turn it off and let him interact, or let him pick up a token.
Yeah.
Or the gremlins, bio gremlins as well. He is definitely a massive source of shenanigans.
Yeah. And flexibility. I think mid game, Soma suddenly can change his entire focus of what he's trying to score through these guys.
Exactly that. And it's the fact on that trigger as well, you ignore being engaged. So you've just put down a scheme marker. I walk up a biogremlin to engage you and then get a crier to obey it and pick up that scheme marker you've just dropped on a seven of anything. Which, let's be honest, one thing we did miss off Summer's card, actually, the key thing is Bayou 2 card.
Oh, yeah.
Bayou 2. And I can't believe we missed this because this is one of my favourite abilities. So any model within 6 inches of Summer Teeth Jones can cheat Fate using the top card of the Fate deck. Now, that is absolutely amazing, I think, because if you flip a 2 or a 3 and you can't be bothered chucking in a 13, you just flip the next card on the deck instead. It's like having a positive flip all the time when you're within 6 inches of Summer.
But you do have to keep it if it's lower.
Yeah, but that's the other side of it. But that's the gremlinness of it. Yeah, you do have to keep it when it's lower. I think it happened against me and you last night. I was on around 9. You were on around 14, 15, I think. I've decided to buy you 2 card it. I ended up going down to 5. You were still on 14, 15. So I put myself in a worse position. But I think it was a Bayou Gremlin you were trying to kill anyway. So I was like, fuck it. Doesn't really matter. But yeah, these criers, they are such essential parts of Summer's toolbox, really. The front of the card stats, distraction. Anyone within 2 inches gets a minus to the willpower jewels. If you target a crier with an attack action, they can discard a card to put you on a negative to your attack jewel. Yeah, bully. So if they target something with a lower cost, they can add whatever suits they want to the final jewel total. When they die, you get to summon in a Bayou Gremlin. They've got the Bayou Bash to add to their stats as well. And also, if a friendly model within 6 inches is killed, you can push one model within 6 inches up to 2 inches towards the killed model. So there's so much shenanigans with them.
I think the thing is, this box is full of really, really good models with really, really good synergy. But I'd actually probably say the last box has got even better ones because there's a double act in there, isn't there?
There is indeed. There is indeed. So the last box is the Hootenanny box. And it has one of my absolute favourite models of all time in it, Georgie and Olaf, who is just such a cool model, really. So Tom, Georgie and Olaf.
So there's this little gremlin and it's riding this big orc thing and it's a little sod. Riding a big sod. It's a pain in the neck, right? So it's a complex model, I suppose, Chris, is the best way to put this.
Yeah.
Because, again, there's nothing amazing, but the stats are relatively good. So defense 6, willpower 6, movement 5. It's got two abilities that are stat 5. One of them is a min 2 attack, which is 0-inch range. One of them is a 12-inch gun attack, which is 2-4-5 damage with a crit strike trigger available. But when you then compound everything we've talked about and think that custom firearm is potentially a stat 7 attack,
yeah,
and Georgie and Olaf has potentially ditched a card to get a free focus before they blast you in the face with it,
yeah,
then things start to add up very quickly. So how does this manifest on the game board, Chris? What are they doing?
He's a mobile gun platform. He's another one. The Bayou's a very complex place with lots of people vying for power in there. And Georgie's another one who likes to think he's the boss of the Bayou. So his bonus action's actually who runs Gremlin Town. If anyone's seen Mad Max, hopefully you're getting the reference here. Not the first Mad Max. If I have to tell you which Mad Max it is, then it's not worth me even discussing this any further. But he puts out a 3-inch pulse on a 5. He needs to get this off. And any friendly minion in range just gains focus +1. Simple as that. But if Georgie has line of sight to the crew's leader, he suffers 2 damage off the back of it. Because obviously Summer just shoots him and says, I run Gremlin Town, not you.
My hat is bigger than
yours. Which, you know, if we're going to get the tape measure out, it might not be. But in theory, Summer has the biggest hat. But like I say, he's a mobile gun platform because of the piggyback ride ability. So he can take gun actions while he's actually engaged. So he's constantly using that custom firearm. 2-4-5 damage with the ricochet trigger on a mask as well. So like I said before, if he's got a focus on him, which if old Cranky's nearby, you've probably ditched the card to get a focus, to get a concentrate. You can get that ricochet. So you'll be getting 2-4-5 damage and then a potential 1-2-4 damage on another model within 3 inches. His punch is pretty decent anyway, to be honest. Staggering punch, it automatically gives out staggered. But if you get the mass trigger on that, you can take a gun action off the back of it. So, you know, Georgie is quite a tanky little model. Hard to kill. Get him down to two or more health. You can't take him below one. So, you know, it's going to take a few big hits to take him out. And another one.
He also charges you down with his What a Lovely Day, doesn't he? Yeah. Like, literally comes at you.
Yeah, exactly that. So you damage him, he's pushing 4 inches towards you. Now, the thing is, you can damage him with a friendly model. So I've used that often with the, I think it was the Bayou Gremlins. Is it Ricochet? No, Wild Shot, sorry, off the Bayou Gremlins gun. So with the Bayou Gremlins gun, you suffer plus one damage to the enemy, but then a friendly model within range of line of sight suffers one damage. So I'll ping one damage onto Georgie and Olaf. He can then push 4 inches towards the Bayou Gremlin because there's no restriction of friendly or enemy on that.
That is really good.
And again, when he dies, you summon in a Bayou Gremlin in base contact because that's all it is, really. A little Bayou Gremlin riding on top of a big Gremlin.
So who else comes in the set then?
So the other one in the set is the Banjinistas. I tend to start the game with one of these boys now. Like I say, I used to start with a big old hog, but David put me onto using the Banjinista because I used to summon these in for shenanigans, but you're best off just having the shenanigans at the start. Courtney, Banjinistas, talk to me.
So Banjinistas, I think... they are another utility piece, like the Criers.
Yeah.
They basically allow you to give you a little bit of extra mobility because they let people push up 2 inches. They can give you shielded if you want to discard the cards.
Yeah.
As well. They're also a source of condition removal with Rebel Yell.
That's
which
it.
Can be quite useful. And Pull the Strings is the bonus action that forces enemies within 4 inches to do a willpower test or get distracted, which you don't want distracted. So
yeah, there's actually a lot of distracted in this crew, more than you realize at first. And that's great because the stats are so low on a lot of the models. Having the distracted on the opposing crew really helps your survivability.
Yeah, exactly. And they've already quite survivable anyway, so it's just increasing that with distracted is really nice.
Yeah. So the main reason I take one of these is at the start of the game, I'll go with Georgie and Olaf, and I'll pulse out that focus to everything. And then I'll activate the Banjinista second. And at the start of his activation, because of the Foggy Bayou Hoedown, all friendly models within a 4-inch pulse can move up to 2 inches. So it kind of spreads everything out again after it's so cluttered up at the start.
Yeah, exactly. Because there's certain crews you just don't want to be clumped up against.
Yeah.
So with your 50 soul stones then, Chris, what are you aiming to do as a general mission? Are you aiming to scheme? Are you aiming to kill? Are you flexing depending on your opponent? What's Soma's kind of plan?
The thing is with Soma, I think he's just so adaptable. You can change the plan on the fly as needs be. So... you can start off with a pretty standard crew for probably 90% of the games with him, really. And then just summon in what you need to adapt to it.
Would you call him more of a schemer to begin with?
He can scheme. He can kill. He's a great all-round master, to be honest with you. He's really complex to get to grips with. You're not going to be winning games your first few games. But if you want to do a quite scheme-intensive pool, then you can summon in insignificant models and criers and obey them from 12 inches away to drop scheme markers or whatever you want them to do. If you want quite a killy crew, you can summon in good old boys. You've got Georgie and Olaf. You've got Lenny. You've got Summer's Gun as well to do a lot of damage in there and summon in the chaff to tie up whatever's left. Like I say, he's a real toolbox. He's got so many different options that you can adapt on the fly to whatever you're doing. And if you lose a key model, maybe not one of the really big ones, but you just summon it back in again.
Lovely. So what we'll do is we'll cut for another short break from our sponsors. And then when we return, Courtney and I will try and come up with some solutions to deal with this Swiss Army knife. And we can potentially talk about any strats and schemes that Soma particularly likes to see when he pops up on the battlefield. So we'll catch you in a sec.
Coming soon to the Hall of Foe Records, its newest album from that former member of the Gremlins with Attitude, Andre. chronic lung disease. Featuring his biggest hit singles such as Forgot About Lenny, What's the Difference Between a Good Old Boy and a Good Old Girl, Bang 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 Bang, and his biggest hit, Still A-N-D-R-E. I'm representing for my gremlins all across the fall.
Still
hitting the moonshine with my homies, yo.
Still
making the time to perfect my thwomp, and I still got love for the swamp. A-N-D-R-E. Chronic Lung Disease. Coming soon to all good, bad, and weird record stores. Pre-order now.
And that's our second sponsor's message. So, loving those adverts. We've got something new. We've got new strats and schemes, which we've diligently been trying to play. And we may have even recorded a podcast where we went over them and then binned it because everyone under the sun did one.
Yeah, and there's one better.
But we've got some new things. So, Chris, you're going to talk us about what Soma likes and doesn't like to see potentially out of the new pool based on the games that we've played with this new system of Gaining Grounds 1, but just in general, what's his eyes lighting up with in terms of the strats? Because you said he's pretty good at everything, so is there anything that he leans towards going, yeah, that's my Soma match?
I think it is strat and scheme dependent, so the more interactive strats, you want to take some killy schemes to counterbalance that. He's not a really interact heavy crew, but neither is he a really kill-heavy crew. So if Corrupted Leylines, Symbols of Authority were in there, really, I'd be wanting to take something quite killy like Assassinate or something like that in the schemes to counterbalance, so I'm not putting all my eggs in one basket. Same with if Public Enemies is in there. If it's quite a killy pool with Public Enemies, Recover Evidence, I'd probably be going for like Research Mission or something on those lines where I'm interacting for my schemes to try and balance it out, because it's not an entirely killy crew, it's not an entirely schemey crew. You do need that balance. He's kind of a, I don't know, Summer's a tough one to score all 8 points with, I'd say, but he's a solid 4 or 5 points in every game. It's whether you can just deny your opponent from scoring their points is the big thing.
I think that's a general rule with the way these new strats and schemes look to be. We've all kind of agreed that scoring 8 points is quite hard.
Yeah.
Between two is a lot easier than it was before. So it's kind of, you're aiming between that 2 and 6 mark. And I think Summer can reliably, like Chris said, if he spreads out his aims, get 4 or 5 each game.
Yeah. It's just stopping the opponent getting theirs, which with the amount of chaff you can summon, with the amount of positioning you can do, you can stop the opponent.
You could play denial quite well with him. I think that's a really interesting point.
Yeah, it was last game. What's the one where you have to get someone in the center of the table now? It's probably the
claim jump,
exactly that. And I just kept putting models in the center of the table and blocking your claim jump, but I didn't even know you had claim jump. It was just like incidental denial.
Really annoying though.
Because every time you killed someone, I just moved something else back there. But there is a really interesting tactic which came up in the Bayou chat, which I tried on Corrupted Leylines. Because Corrupted Leylines is quite a fun one. It was initially kind of like Pass the Parcel in beta testing, wasn't it? And nobody could really wrap their head around it. Yeah. The way it is now, it's kind of like basketball. I don't know. What's an English version of that? Netball?
There's a virus analogy to how it works, but it would be terrible to raise it at this stage.
Yeah. But the thing with the Corrupted Leylines, like I managed to score all 4 points on it in my game against you using this shenanigan. I'll get ripped to pieces if it's wrong. Obviously, do let me know if it's wrong, because I will never do it again and I'll apologise profusely. But
he's only apologising because I abhorrently disagree with this, whether it's exactly right or not.
As you would do if someone scored all 4 points. But the wording on it is, at the end of the turn, a crew can claim any strategy marker in base contact with a friendly model with a lodestone token. Now, it doesn't say anything about insignificant or not there. So what I'd read in the Bayou chat was, obviously, stick it on a skeeter or something along those lines and just move that skeeter around. Now, the skeeter can't interact to pass the token on, but the skeeter can gain the token and it can move around and be near the strategy markers. So turn one, I started off with the token on Lenny, passed it onto the Skeeter, then tossed the Skeeter up 10 inches, then the Skeeter flew another 12 inches. So it was 22 inches up next to a strategy marker, end of turn one. And then I pretty much just moved it to all the other markers using the criers to obey it that little bit further and get in-base contact. So over the course of the game, it did get all 4 points for me.
That insignificant model scoring you all your points.
No, it seems so wrong, but you know, rules is rules.
It's like the other advantage is as well, if you try and kill it, then that just hops back to your next model. So you were being really clever to just also have some models that could just pick it up and score anyway.
Yeah, the lodestone I didn't go for, or the last one I went for, was the one near my deployment zone, because I knew at any point if you killed it, then I had a model in base contact with that that could just score that one for me. So that was the very last one I went for. So I found him really good for that because the maneuverability of the Skeeters and the annoyance of them. I was placing him where your stuff wasn't really and tying you up with enough other chaff that you had to concentrate on that the Skeeter kind of got ignored and was just free to go around and score.
Secret rule lawyer tech, that
secret
is.
Rule lawyer tech. That'll probably get written out at some point, but hey, I'll take that. My first ever win against you, Tom, and I will.
I'm pretty sure you caned me with when I was playing Pandora in the early days, but you can definitely. This actually brings me on to a good point. What masters is Soma potentially not wanting to see? Because I'm leaning towards my girl here.
Yes, yeah. Anything blasty, anything pulsy. I found Ashes and Dust did a lot of damage against my chaff. He would have actually, but for some reason, every time a Bayou Gremlin needed an eight or more to pass a Tesk, I was flipping it off the top deck.
Yeah, that was the draw essence ability, but I think you're right. Anything that's pushing out shockwaves and things. Yeah. I mean, Courtney can probably tell me because he's a resurrectionist player and they've got a lot of abilities to put out auras.
Yeah, it very much so. I mean, I think of like Von Schulk, that's. He has a lot of blasts and stuff.
10 Thunders as well, chucking out their pulses.
Exactly.
So I played against Reaver. I'm sure Reaver put out a lot of damage against him as well.
Yeah, because Reaver has pulses off the pyre markers.
Yeah, that was a really good tactic, bringing out them pyre markers right into the middle of my stuff and then pulsing out off them and...
It's worth saying that Chris takes an absolute bucket load of soulstones when he plays. Like you take like 8 or 9 soulstones. Anything that does lots of incidental chip damage is definitely good. So that you want your stones obviously for summoning and getting the suits that you want, but also if you can do lots and lots of chip damage, so it's pointless to spend one of those soulstones. It can be really annoying if you suddenly get these big models down to half health just by doing one damage.
Exactly.
Like auras or traps or anything.
I would say though that I wouldn't say that was like just a Soma thing or a Chris thing. That's a lot. Summoners do take a lot of soul stones, as you say, just because you want that suit to be able to summon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think when you've got 2 health by your gremlins, if you can just chip away, it kind of wastes a lot of that AP that's been spent to get them out.
Yeah, but I'm getting free cards off the back of it, so I don't really care with the Bayou Gremlins. They're there to die.
That movement shenanigans, because I look at someone like Lenny, and I'm just thinking like Misery with Pandora, or an Obey, or Zoraida telling him to go away, or something. If you need to kind of mess with your formation, don't
mess with the auras, mess with the formation, move things out of position, and get blasts in there. Because like I say, everything's working in little pockets of 2 or 3. So if you're taking one model away, then they're working off the base stats. And the base stats aren't great. That's the whole point.
Courtney, how are you combating Soma?
So,
which master and who are you teching in?
It's a difficult one, and I haven't really got a solution just yet. But like I say, Von Schulk is one. I actually beat Soma with Sheamus as well.
Yeah.
I think it's just a case of. The one thing I found with summoners is obviously, I mean, this is probably going to sound completely obvious, but as soon as you can take that summoner out or put pressure on them, the better you're off. Because there's too many times when you play against summoner like Soma or Dreamer, where if you just leave them, you're not going to win because unless you're playing a summoner yourself, you're gonna get out activated and he's just going to slowly grind you down. And you just need to try and put pressure. And it's easier said than done, I understand, but I think that's one thing that you have to just try and do. You need to make it so that they can't just sit where they want to do, sit where they are, and just pump out men.
I think your big damage dealing masters are definitely the way to go. So, you know, Nekima, Leviticus, Masaki, they're all going to put out a lot of pain. If they can really threaten either the master or the henchman, you're going to really upset the plans, because some of the energy is then going to have to go towards fixing the gaps rather than dealing with it. So your super solos, Sheamus, as Courtney mentioned as well, they're really going to be probably the things you tech towards.
Yeah, the worst moment I had with him really was against Zip. And turn one, I started with Summer pretty much, summoned a couple of things, moved him forward. Zip managed to just get in Summer's face turn one and throw him right back into the middle of Zip's crew. Summer somehow managed to last until turn three, but he was taken out of the game entirely. And of course, the crew's completely fallen apart, because you're starting off eight or nine Soulstones down because you want them for summoning in. That's potentially a model. You're losing your summoner halfway through the game, and the rest of the crew didn't really do much against that. So that was a big lesson there about overextending Summer turn one. And obviously, I'd heard Zip could do that. I'd never quite come across it before, and I won't ever let it happen again, basically.
Yeah, it's either you're positioning to remove him or you're killing him, but you need to take something away from where it needs to be, either by taking it completely off. I mean, Tara comes to mind as well.
Yeah,
you bury Lenny, he ain't doing anything for the rest of the crew.
Yeah, you bury Lenny, you bury Summer, you bury anything, really. Like, say they've all got these little overlapping auras that they all use, so just take out.
Colette's Presto Changeo comes to mind as well.
Yeah, yeah, exactly that.
But he's definitely the more adaptable ones. Out of the many masters we all play, I'd say even out of the many summoners, I think of Dreamer as just the Swiss Army knife from the start, but Summer can actually pitch himself one way and transition mid-game, which Dreamer definitely can't do.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's really his calling card.
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that.
So I suppose this is the time where we need to score him. Courtney, do you want to talk us through our lovely scientific scoring process?
Yeah, we have five categories. It's learning curve. Four categories.
We just added one in there.
I can't read.
They all have nets on the end, remember, as well.
Yes. Learning curve, shenanigans, hiring pool, and how much of a dick they are.
It's pretty scientific.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty scientific.
It took a long time to work these out, really.
So, Chris, you're allowed to join in for the first three.
Yeah.
And then the last one is up to me and Courtney, which is going to be interesting. So, learning curviness, then. You've already hinted towards this. Where would we put five being very challenging, one being super easy to pick up out the box?
He's more towards a four, I'd say. He's not... He's not a five by any stretch. You know, you'll get the basics straight away, but it is all about positioning. It's all about what you want where, for what aura to affect who, what model you need to summon where, and who you need with it to get what done. There's a lot of learning the cards with this, and a lot more so than a normal crew. Because, for example, with Pandora, where you took a couple of extra models to round it up to 50 soul stones, with Summer, you're buying an extra 15, 20 models to get the crew rounded out. So you're learning potentially 10, 15 different models, what they do, just to get to grips with the crew. So it's definitely top end of learning curviness.
Yeah, I think even seeing you play him, like, I've played you more recently when you've got your head around him, and it's like, this goes here, this goes here, this goes here. But there does seem that initial kind of commitment. Yeah. I mean, Courtney played you in the earlier days. Courtney, did you see a little bit of kind of a lot happening in Chris's turns?
Yeah, I think the first time we played him, we were playing crews that we didn't actually know anything about, which was a great experience. What does this card do? Oh, what's this model do again?
Oh, just realised that.
I think the problem, I think this is something that summoners have an issue. Do you have, because it's a combination of learning the crew, but having to learn everything, because you can summon pretty much everything.
Yeah.
They are probably some of the more difficult masters to play, I feel.
Yeah.
What about shenaniganiness then? How many shenaniganiganigans can you get out of Soma?
I'd put him as a solid five in my eyes.
Is he top shenanigan bins?
He is pure shenanigans. If you love shenanigans, there is no one in Bayou more shenanigan-y than Soma. because
I feel the Bayou are automatically on a plus one to this score anyway. Yeah, so that should be funny.
That's because Lenny's nearby. So yeah, there he's actually a six for shenaniganness then. But yeah, he's such a versatile summoner. Like I say, you need a model moving, you can get a Crier to do it, Old Cranky to do it, Lenny to toss it. You need something to interact. Like I said before, with that Skeeter, you can yeet a Skeeter 22 inches up a board and get it to interact turn one while it's engaged. You know, there's not many other crews you can do that with. There's so many little plays and shenanigans and ways to mess with your opponent. Yeah, he's a solid five in my eyes.
Have you got like a top shenanigan, like a best shenanigan? Or Courtney, have you got like a worst shenanigan you faced?
I think it's a lot. The worst thing that comes to mind is just with the Criers, just being able to basically models that you just think, oh well, you know, it's just Skeeters are just, it's not going to do anything, and then make them actually do something really annoying, like just take away your scheme marker, which is always fun.
Yeah, it's exactly that. It's just messing with your opponent's plans in a completely unexpected way. So yeah, removing their scheme markers when they've dropped them. I think, was it you I was playing in your first game against Summer Tom, and you had a model sat in the middle and Lenny just walked over and chucked it into a wall 10 inches away?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was just, I'm trying to think, it wasn't it? It might have even been like a hollow wave that lobbed across the battlefield. No, I think it was an abomination.
It was an abomination
that
summoned
in, and he just chucked it out the way.
Yeah, yeah. Just completely moved it out the way and just kind of messed up, which freed up everything else there as well. So it's just, yeah there's so many options for shenanigans, but it's, again, it's that learning curve kicks in, so you know which trick to use at which time.
It's hard for the opponent because a lot of these will take you off guard, because you do need to have that real insightful knowledge of the crew to know that these tricks are available. And if you don't, you can think everything's going fine, as Courtney said, and then suddenly your models are, or your opponent's models aren't doing what you expect them to do.
Yeah, yeah.
What about the hiring pool then? Because you've got an awful lot of models to choose from. So if five is best hiring pool ever, lots of options, and one is very thin. I think I scored Pandora quite low, didn't I, last time? But yeah. Where would you put Soma in comparison?
It's a tough one because there are a lot of models to choose from for his hiring pool, but I tend to stick to like a base crew pretty much. So Summer and the Skeeters, Lenny, Old Cranky and Georgie, they're the solid staples because you can't hire any of them. Well, you can summon the Skeeters, but you know, there is totems, you get them anyway. I tend to start with two good old boys because they're nice, versatile models. And then I'll take either a Banjanista or a Spit Hog for another model, which leaves you with around 8 or 9 stones for summoning in. So, you know, it's hiring pool. There is a massive pool of models to choose from, but you don't tend to start with them. You tend to summon them in as the situation arises and on the fly adapt to what you need to do. So it's probably around a three.
Is it that easy? Is that the ones that you can't really summon, you hire because they're all good? Yeah. There isn't any that you would summon that you think you should hire from the start?
No, I think
I'm just thinking from a dreamer point of view. I take a Stitch Together or I take an Insidious Madness every once in a while, but I can summon them in, but I like to have them on the board at the start. Have you got any that are like that?
No, it depends on the strat and the scheme. It really does. So I tend to start with the Crier just to push everything out and then summon in a Spit Hog to give it the upgrade. And I don't tend to bring a Crier in because I don't need it until turn 2 or 3. So it'd just be a waste of AP. So I'll just summon it in turn 2 or 3 instead.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah, it tends to be a pretty staple crew with Summer, which is good because you get to learn the core side of that crew and then just summon in what you need, where you need.
No, that sounds really useful. I think it's a case of, I think if you want to play Summer, you have to sit there with the cards for a little bit. But once you have, you're going to have so many options.
You do. It's not a cheap keyword by any means. So although I say the hiring pool is only a three, you know, there's a lot of models. So for example, if you bought like Summer's Crew, the Deliverance box, Listen Up box and Hootenanny box, it's going to cost you about £120. In dollars, that's $3,000. I don't know exchange rates at the minute.
I think that's accurate. I think
it's probably accurate. And you're probably going to want two Deliverance boxes, actually, to get yourself a second Spit Hog and 4 more Bayou Gremlins, because Bayou Gremlins, you can have up to 8 at once. So that's another £25, so another $4,000 on top of that. So you're talking like a good £140 just to get the keywords. And that's a base crew with your options covered. So,
but then he is one that's going to last you quite a while. I suppose it's the pro that comes after that.
Exactly though. That. You've then got everything you need for the keywords, and that's it. You're ready for any situation that's pretty much thrown at you. So
right, let's go on to the last score then. Courtney, you lead the way here with our final, most precise metric.
Dickishness.
The dick score.
Yeah.
You know, I'm actually would say he's a three.
Yeah?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that playing against Salt Up, I was really aggravated. I mean, obviously, the criers can fuck off.
the criers are a five.
I think playing against a lot of crews, I think, I wouldn't say that, like, Soma plays, I wouldn't say he's exceptionally dickish.
Yeah.
Personally. So I'd say a three.
I might even lowball that. I might say a two or a one even. I think within the perspective of the Bayou,
yeah,
there's some really annoying masters. Like, I hate playing Zip. I don't like Zareda. I'm not particularly keen on Ophelia either. So I think Soma's kind of the refreshing Bayou choice. But honestly, I think he plays like a straight summoner. I think he's really fun to play against. I don't think you're going to get feel bad too much. As much as I said last time that you won't see what he's doing coming sometimes, none of it feels cheap unless it's Chris with the Skeeter scoring points. So that will bring it up to a five, but I think that's more the Bayou chat than the actual Bayou characters. Yeah. But I think the actual models, I'd probably put a one. I think he's actually quite nice to play against. I think he doesn't do anything that is particularly feels bad. I think you could play Summer against a newer player, and I think the newer player could still get a couple of points and still enjoy it. It wouldn't feel like, you know, if I pull out Pandora against someone who's never played before, you just shut them down. They feel they can't do anything. Then obviously they're going to feel quite bad. But I think Soma is a good advert for the game as a silly Bayou man with a big hat who kind of messes with stuff. And I think even if you get tabled by a Soma, or even if you score really poorly and he smashes you and you don't manage to score much, it's still like, ah, gremlins. You know, I don't think there's that association. And he's not got anything that deliberately interacts with the opponent to shut them down. He's not a debuffing master. He's more of a buffing his own side.
Yeah.
So you don't feel like you're unable to do anything. It just feels that when you do try, he flips better than you because he gives them better scores. Or when they're flipping against you, you don't feel like you can't possibly do something. It's just reducing your chances of doing something good when you try, if that makes any sense at all.
I think alongside that, even if you do lose to Summer, you've killed a lot of stuff to get there.
There's a
so
lot of
corpses. Feel like you've accomplished something just looking at the sheer mountain of corpses you've left behind, really.
And I think you can ascertain quite quickly with Summer's crew, as a person who doesn't know it, what each one does.
Yeah.
You can anticipate that Banjanista, when he starts playing, is going to get them moving. You can anticipate the Cry is going to tell them what to do. You can anticipate the Bayou Gremlins are just wheat and chaff.
Yeah.
So I think they're very clear, which is quite nice as well. Sometimes you don't realize that, you know, this little model with a rifle can actually destroy your crew, or, you know, this insignificant looking person is actually a horrendous beater. But Soma's crew,
nothing's
visually
too overpowered, is it? And it's kind of, it all seems about right for its cost, really.
Yeah, I think it's a really nice one. And I've enjoyed the two games Chris and I have played. I've enjoyed playing against him because it's a fun master to learn how to play against, but it also, Chris is always doing something, and then that's always interesting to react to. I think I said it in the last podcast that I like the masters that force interaction.
Yeah.
And even just by Soma going, we're going to do this, we're going to move over here, I'm going to make you do this, it promotes a more interesting conversation then, I think, in the game, rather than just, I'm going to do this and hurt this and then I'm done.
Exactly that.
So that'll probably bring us to the end, unless we've got any further comments we want to add.
It's the final pitch, isn't it?
Yeah, go on then.
So
sell it to us. If people aren't even convinced by the end of this wonderful podcast.
Exactly that. If you want a lot of fun with a lot of options, and occasionally stuff just goes wrong, but in a completely chaotic, fun way, then Summer's definitely the model for you. or the keyword for you. Like I say, it's not a cheap investment, but it's one you'll get a lot of use out. You can spend that £140 and you could only ever use Summer. He will play into whatever strat and scheme you want him to, but you need to get to grips with what he does first to get the most out of him, really.
Do you think he's a really good one for people who are maybe like, have already played a couple of crews with different groups like Outcasts or Neverborn? They want to dip into Bayou. Do you think he's a really good option? Because it's like, yeah, you have your initial outlay of cash, but he's the most Bayouist Bayou of Bayou.
I think he is, yeah. He is the most Bayouist Bayou of all the Bayou, yeah. He's the most thematic in terms of Bayou, in terms of pure Bayou anyway, I think. And yeah, it's just a great range of models. It's a great load of fun to play. You've got something that does everything in the crew. And yeah, you'll never not have a fun game with him, even if it's just stupidly cheating in the Red Joker to put five Bayou Gremlins in someone's face for a laugh. You know, it's you will never not have a fun game with Summer.
And that'll probably bring us an end to this podcast, this tale of giant hats. And big thank you to Chris for leading us off with that. And then we've got the wonderful Courtney on the next one, who's going to lead us through some filthy Reza business, I presume.
Yeah, we're going to do Molly.
Molly, fantastic. So we'll look forward to that on the next one. Now, as always, you're able to find us on a multitude of channels. We've got the Harlefo Twitter, which you'll be able to follow and get updates on all the newest releases, as well as any photos and bits and pieces we want to share. If you've enjoyed the podcast, as always, you'll get a message at the end, but you can follow us on Facebook at TNG Productions, where we'll share all of the items, or even on Patreon at TNG Productions, where you can support us for a teeny amount to get early access to everything that we chuck out. But aside from that, big thank you to Chris and Courtney.
Whoop, whoop.
Thank you.
And we hope you have a wonderful day, and we'll see you in the next one.
Bye.
Well, thank you for listening to the Harlefo Show. We hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you did, drop us a tweet on the Twitter at Harlefo Show. Also, you could chuck us some money on Patreon at TNG Productions to help us keep making this amazing content. Also, get some exclusive freebies like dice and t-shirts and other amazing things. Check out the show notes for all the info. So once again, thank you for tuning into the Harlefo Show. Please come back next time for more fucking nonsense. Bye!